Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Straight Up Sabres, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo. As always, I'm Brendan.
And I'm Taylor.
And folks, the dream is dead. It is over. There is just about zero chance that the Buffalo Sabres are going to make the playoffs, extending their streak to 13 seasons as the Sabres fell to the Edmonton Oilers 8-3.
In what could be best described as a brutal third period effort, giving up five goals.
Everybody on Edmonton was having a night. Connor McDavid had four assists. Zach Hyman had a pair of goals. Matias Ekholm had two goals and an assist. Drysdale had a goal and two assists. Not the effort that we needed to see from the Sabres in a game that was crucial to keeping their playoff hopes alive. We had said going into this West Coast road trip that the Sabres were going to at least win three of the four games on this one. And this loss to Edmonton puts them, as at the time of us recording this, 1-2 on this road trip as we're recording this Sunday evening, just about an hour before the Sabres are set to take on the Calgary Flames. Taylor, as we mentioned, it really feels like it's done. The slim, if not improbable, chances that they had coming into this trip just feel completely diminished now. We're going into this game against Calgary again. We don't know what the outcome is going to be, but even if they win, there's just no shot here. They really needed to be flawless down the stretch. You need to be able to keep picking up two of three, three of four. The Sabres haven't even been able to win five in a row this year. So it was a tall task to begin with. And ultimately, I think that this kind of a finish is just indicative of who this Sabres team is right now. And if we're being honest, I think that it can kind of go in a couple different directions. Like, are they good enough to be a playoff contender right now? I would like to think that they could at least be in the conversation. It's not as though they're going to get in there and they'd be a threat to actually go out and win the cup. But it just feels like, again, the hallmark of this season is that this team should be a lot better than what we're seeing from the on-ice product. So, Taylor, give me your thoughts on the 8-3 loss to the Oilers and where the Sabres stand now as they are all but eliminated from playoff contention with just a few weeks to go.
I mean, it was an absolutely brutal loss. Partially because they were playing well for a lot of the game. They were really in it. In fact, easy to forget now, it was tied going into the third. And with 48 seconds left in the second period, the Sabres are up 3-2. So there was a lot to like about the way the first two periods went. Zach Hyman, inexplicably with his 47th goal of the year, and he'd later get his 48th in the game, tied it up late in the second. And then you could just see looking at the box score what a disaster the third period was. They gave up goals at 4:38, 5:40, 15, 18, 16, 58, and then also one goal with 9 seconds left to Connor Brown. That's terrible. I mean, it's a horrific finish, and it wasn't a matter of UPL playing poorly or just a couple weird things happening. It was just a total collapse all the way down. And it's just really unfortunate because it just feels like the Sabres team has proven time and again this year that they're not one of the just classic bad Sabres teams. This team just actually sucks. Not enough talent, not good, whatever. It's the kind of team we've seen so much recent years. They're not that. They refuse to fall out of it. They won't lose three games in a row. They do beat a lot of good teams. But as soon as there's a little bit of pressure, as soon as they're in a big situation, they totally collapse. And it's happened multiple times. They've been totally inconsistent, but the only consistency you would say they have is these moments happen and they can't meet the moment. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but that is another thing to me that at least partially comes down to coaching. they're not composed in these situations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're young, but you need, I think you need a better leadership in these situations. I don't think this can keep happening, and you can just kind of explain it away.
I completely agree. It just came down to the fact in this one that you were in a position to win a must-win game, and you get into the third period, you get into crunch time, and the wheels just fall off. And how can you look anywhere else but coaching for that? You know, I think it's one thing if it's this back and forth battle here, and then it gets down to the stretch and the Sabres, you know, lose a 4-3 game against Edmonton, but to just completely and utterly let the floodgates open like that, where you allow 5 goals in the third period, it's inexcusable. And it's another example that, I should say, it's another example of a situation that we've become, I feel like, all too familiar with, where you walk away from a game and the main takeaway is, I don't know how the coach survives this.
I mean, it would have to be a total, just, I guess, it would be indicative of not caring. That's the only way that Granato survives, is if Pegula really is checked out and just does not care about having standards or anything like that anymore. We said it a million times, but he's the 6th longest tenured coach in the league. He hasn't made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Guys in the NHL don't get 3 years. He got 3.5. And he got to be an assistant here before that. You know, he didn't walk into an unfamiliar situation. He walked into a situation where he knew the players. And obviously he walked into a rebuild. They were blowing it up midseason in 2021, rightfully so. But now is when you win. Rebuilds aren't 10 years. And I guess this is an obvious point for both him and Kevin Adams. But in 2021, when they were terrible, they were not a normal terrible. They were awful. They were one of the worst teams ever. But they weren't talent-wise like that. They had guys on the roster they were going to trade for good prospects. They had Eichel, Reinhardt, Hall, and Ristolainen that they were going to trade. But they also had, like, Casey Mittelstadt, who is now traded as well. They had Rasmus Dahlin. They were soon to draft Owen Power. They won the lottery. Got to draft Owen Power. They had Tage. Like, they had a lot of the guys that they have now. And going into that season, they actually had just drafted Quinn and Paterka as well. And Bottrill had already drafted Dylan Cousins and Samuelson. So a lot of guys that are here. Ryan Johnson, too, who's here now. These guys were already in tow. So between Granato and Adams, 3 years of this being what we have after 3 years is concerning, to say the least.
Right. I think the question is, you know, what do you have to show for it? What do you have to show from all that you've invested, not only into this roster, but into this coaching staff and the opportunities that you've given them? And it is just shown its face time and time again, the fact that Granato, while he absolutely deserves credit for how he turned the team around in the wake of Ralph Kruger and in the ways that he was able to get guys on track, obviously it goes without saying the move to center for Tage was huge and valuable. The way that, you know, Dahlin was able to get his game together last year after Kruger pretty much just destroyed his game. The career years that guys had last year and everything, like all things that, like, rightfully he deserves credit for. But at the end of the day, you need to be able to maximize this entire roster, this entire team. And you had just about everybody back from last year. And you got the thing that you really did not have at all last year, which is consistent quality goaltending. And again, you just have to ask the question, what do you have to show for it? And it's nothing. This year has been a huge step back. I really can't stress that enough. Like, there's the, I guess we could call it, like, the rational part of me that does believe that, like, they're not far off. Like, truly, I believe that you make a big addition to the forward group, like we've been talking about. You take one of those swings and you add a guy there. You make a... It's tough because I think ultimately it's not going to happen. I should say, I know it's not going to happen, but, like, ultimately you'd like for Samuelson to be a third pairing guy, but that's not going to be the case with how much he gets paid. And then you get somebody that's actually a difference maker in your top four again, you know, making another addition there. And then I think you're in business. And the thing is, though, is that now with us pushing 13 years with this, for a lot of people, it just feels like, and understandably so, that it is this massive step back. And I think that I'm kind of, like, in the middle with that, because, like I said, on the one hand, I don't feel like that they're, like, super far off from being a playoff team. I think with the right coach, even this team right now should be several spots up in the playoff hunt, or at least in like even in the second wild card spot right now. I think with the right coach, they absolutely can be somebody that's able to pull the levers the right way and maximize the guys, and again, be able to just, I guess, have an understanding of what gives you success, what brings you success, and the areas that you need to clean up. And for Granato's sake, he identified an area that they needed to clean up, which was their team defense. Absolutely was a problem last year. But then he just totally overcompensated to the point that it took away from the main thing that they were good at. And you've seen how detrimental it's been for this team all year. And so you need to have the right guy in place that's able to pull the levers. You need to have the right guy in place that's able to get the most out of these guys. And you need to have the right guy in place that's going to be able to keep these guys accountable. And I truly just don't really think Granato is that guy with just how so much of this year has gone. You know, you listen to or read about any of even like the post-game comments, like after the Edmonton loss, I just had it pulled up here. Tage, his quote was, "I don't really know what to say about that one. It's obviously a frustrating loss. I thought our first and second periods were good hockey. You go into the third in a tie game, chance to win an important hockey game, and they get a couple goals and we're chasing from behind. They get another one, and then it feels out of reach. Now it's a lot of frustration we let creep in to our game out there at the end." And again, like, you need to have a coach that's able to navigate the highs and the lows. And it just feels like when the lows occur, the bottom falls out for this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so clear just anytime that there's a moment where they could really take the reins and be like, well, we're going to show some consistency. We're going to really try to get back into this playoff race, quote unquote. Never happens. And they didn't this whole year, basically. They didn't take advantage of UPL being as good as he's been. It's ridiculous. And you brought up that stat last show where they are shooting way above their expected shooting percentage, and they, you know, their goaltending has been so good too, and yet they're basically 500 in that stretch. It's infuriating. They just haven't met the moment at all, no doubt about it. So I haven't really thought it out entirely yet, but in addition to coaching changes, there has to be some personnel changes. And I think they're going to be. I think the Byram Casey Mittelstadt trade was signs that they're not just going to roll into next year with tinker with a few things. They seemingly want to make one major move at least. And they really should be thinking about that.
While we're talking about this, you know, of course, I think rightfully a lot of the blame does go on Granato, but we, of course, need to acknowledge the fact that it's on the players as well. And while Granato is obviously the one that puts them into positions to succeed, there has been guys who have really struggled a lot this year. And while the guy that I want to bring up to you doesn't necessarily fall into that category for us specifically, I think as of late, Bowen Byram, I think there's been a lot of the ugly parts to the defensive side of his game that have been showing themselves a bit. Of course, the trade happens. He goes on a great run over the first few games. There's this energy to his game that really felt like it was lacking from the lineup. We've talked at length about how great of a skater he is, and just adding that kind of a dimension into the makeup of this team, the makeup of this D group. It's just invaluable. And there's a lot that Byram does really well, but we also had talked about when he was acquired the fact that he was struggling. There were some issues there in Colorado. I think we both agreed that to a certain extent, a very real extent, that maybe some of the bad underlyings weren't necessarily fully indicative of Byram's play or a reflection on him. But it feels as though over these past few games, whether you want to look at it at the eye test and when it comes to positioning, defending, you know, just again, while a play is being cycled around in your own zone, or you want to talk about off the rush or anything like that, there have been some ugly moments, some definite struggles there that I think have understandably brought up some of the red flags for Sabres fans, as of course we continue to see Casey Mittelstadt playing at like a point per game pace right now with Colorado. But again, that's not to say that this trade is like some colossal disaster. It absolutely could work out. We've seen what Byram's potential is, and if he's able to reach that, then this is going to be a trade that we'll be able to look fondly back on. But it hasn't been great in his own zone these past few games, Taylor, this past stretch here. Still a lot of good we see, you know, whether it's things like breakouts and of course just being able, like his confidence with the puck on a stick, all of that, we get that. But I want to talk about this a little bit with you. I mean, what level of concern are you feeling right now with some of the deficiencies in Byram's defensive game?
Well, moderately concerned. I think what we've seen so far is when the trade happened, everyone was like, wow, Byram, a lot of talent, but he really hasn't put it together for any extended period. And we saw it first was like the flashes. You saw the talent, his first few games here. And now we've seen the not putting it all the way together part aspect to it as well. So, yeah, I guess moderately concerned because I'm not sure they have enough strong defensive defensemen, which is why they keep shoehorning Matias Samuelsson into that role. Power is definitely an offense-first guy. And Dahlin, no doubt about it, is an offense-first guy. Not that I hate that necessarily. Obviously, I like offense, but there was some level of concern over that, definitely. And Dahlin, by the way, I mean, he's not bad in his own zone or anything. And I have faith Power will get better at it too, but it just – they had needs on the blue line. It's just kind of a tough thing. On the other hand, Byram's talent is such that, one, he could get better at the defensive side. He is still young. And also that maybe if he works out the way you want him to, you won't be thinking about his defense that much. So hopefully. But on the other hand, yeah, I'm a little concerned for sure.
Well, no, I think that sums it up perfectly. I think that's where people really should be at, is that, of course, you should absolutely have a certain level of concern when it comes to what we've been seeing these past few games. But I think that just has to come with the caveat of a couple of things. One, we know what his talent level is. We know that the physical ability is there. It's just a matter of putting it together, which of course is not something that is any small task by any stretch of the imagination. But again, like, you know, it's not like it's something that's like way out of the realm of possibility that he's going to be able to figure that out, given how talented he is. And the other side of that coin is the fact that he very well could have another coach next year and somebody that is able to appropriately help him, whether it's, you know, round out that part of his game or just like mitigate the negative side of it and just really allow his offensive game to flourish. Like either way, like there's a couple of different tracks we can take with figuring this out. You know, like we can sacrifice him being a defensive stalwart if it means that his offensive game is going to be firing on all cylinders. And just in the same way that, you know, if it means that his offensive game kind of is where it is right now, and, you know, you continue to see some of that finishing ability, and then he is able to really just improve more in the defensive zone where he is a bit more of like a proper two-way defenseman, then that's also an option you could potentially take too. So I don't think we have to be resigned to just kind of one road that he can go down to get his game back on track here, because yeah, just again, I know we keep kind of making the point, I don't mean to belabor it, but it just comes down to the ability, and Byram certainly has the ability. It's just a matter of putting it together.
Yeah. Do we want to hear a word from our sponsor before we get to the next thing?
I sure would.
All right, folks, this podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. So, for example, Sabres back on the ice Wednesday night, after whatever happens on Sunday night, we're recording before that. Wednesday, Disappointment Bowl with the Ottawa Senators. Two really, really sad franchises that are failing in their rebuilds. So, who's going to win? Who's going to score? Who's going to have the most saves? All things you can bet on at DraftKings Sportsbook. All you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with promo code THPN. New customers can bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only in DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age vary by jurisdiction, void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are the registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved. So, Brendan, Taylor, we were talking about before we got on here, Sam Reinhart.
Did he do it?
No, he scored his 49th goal, I was going to say. Oh. Game's still going on, so there's 12 minutes left. He might score his 50th goal tonight. Zach Hyman just scored his 50th goal.
Jesus.
The guy we were just talking about. But Jesus. We don't care about Zach Hyman here. We're here to talk about our good friend, Sam Reinhart. I know you wanted to talk about this. What specifically did you want to talk about in terms of his soon to be 50 goal season?
Well, the exact comment I made to you was, yeah, I was at my dad's house watching the Panthers Flyers game and Sam scored his 49th. And I think that I cheered more passionately for that goal than I have at any point through, like, I would say 50% of my Sabres fandom over the past 10 years.
That's a sad commentary.
I was hyped. Like, I legitimately like shouted and was like super psyched when he scored. And it just, after I sat back down, I was like, just thinking about it. And I'm like, how many times while I've been at home have I like reacted like that? And yeah, obviously, of course, when you're watching a game and we score like a goal or something like that, of course it's exciting. It's like, but like him being so close to 50, again, a guy that's not even on our team anymore. It just, I really want to see him do it. It just, something came out of me that I was just like so hyped about it. And immediately my reaction was like, my God, wouldn't it be awesome to feel that level of excitement about my own team?
Well, someday, maybe the Sabres will draft a player like Sam Reinhart.
Wouldn't that be great?
So I was thinking about it. I mean, 50 is not nothing. And I know scoring has been up the last few years, but in our lifetime as fans, we have not seen a lot of 50 goal seasons. Brendan, do you want me to go through real quick the 50 goal season since I've been a hockey fan?
How many are there?
I don't know. I have to go through here real quick. I'm just going to name them.
Damn, this would have been a good quiz.
I know. Yeah, maybe I'll forget about them and we can do that. So my first year watching a full, I got into the Sabres during the 99 Cup run. Real bandwagoning. It's been all uphills from there. Been a lot of fun. But anyway, so my first full season watching is 99-2000. Bure, 58 goals. The next year, Bure, 59. Sakic, 54. Jágr, 52. That's pretty good. Iginla, 52 the next year. Milan Hajduk in 2002-2003. The next season, no one had more than 41 goals. Iginla, Kovalchuk, and National League. Then after the lockout, brief scoring boom. Chichu, Jágr, Kovalchuk, Ovechkin, and Heatley all had at least 50. Chichu had 56. Wow, good job, Joe Thornton. Speaking of Zach Hyman. And then 06-07, LeCavalier had 52. Danny Heatley had 50. 07-08, Ovechkin had 65. Kovalchuk had 52. Iginla had 50. The next year, Ovechkin had 56. 2010, Crosby and Stamkos had 51. Ovechkin had 50. Corey Perry had 50 the following year. 2011-12, Stamkos had 60. Malkin had 50. Then you have the lockout shortened season. 2014, Ovechkin, 51. 2015, Ovechkin, 53. 2016, Ovechkin, 50. 2016-17, none. None again the next year. 2018-19, Ovechkin, 51. Leon Draisaitl had 50.
Mm.
Then the COVID shortened seasons, two of them. And then Matthews, 60. Leon, 55. Kreider, 52. Ovechkin, 50. Last year, McDavid, 64. Pasternak, 61. Rantanen, 55. Leon, 52. Braden Point, 51. And, yeah, so far this year, it's Austin Matthews and Zach Hyman. So going through that, one of the obvious takeaways is that scoring is going up quite a bit. And there's that stretch there in the middle where it's just Ovechkin, basically.
Yep.
But still, that's not that many. That is almost a quarter century of NHL hockey. That was like 40 guys I just named. So pretty good company for Sam Reinhart to be in.
Absolutely.
A lot of really good players. You know, some Hall of Famers, some guys that are right below that level, some guys that were pretty good for a short period, and also Jonathan Chichu.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, we've known that Sam is a very special player, was going to grow into a special player. You know, there's so many aspects of his game that are just, again, in the upper echelon of the league, you know, especially when you talk about just his vision, his playmaking ability. I mean, really, the vision is the big thing where I feel like he is one of the best in the NHL when it comes to how he sees the game, how he processes the game, and then in turn, how that then positively affects his playmaking ability. And, you know, there's other areas as well, how good he is on the power play, generally speaking, how good he is around the net. And an area of his game where I really just – it's incredible the way that it has developed, and you've seen it, like the flashes of it. But his finishing ability, did you ever think that Sam Reinhart was going to be a guy that would be scoring 50 goals? Because for me, I feel like I saw him as like very much a point per game player, but 50 goals, man.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. Looking at his first full year here in 2015-16, he only took 165 shots in a full season. So he wasn't really that aggressive in terms of shooting the puck. He was definitely, to me, like definitely a pass first kind of guy. I mean, he had more goals than assists that year, but yeah, like to your point, I never thought of him as a guy that's like, oh yeah, that guy is gonna, that he could score 50 someday or even 40. And now, like looking at his career, I mean, he already has more shots this year than he took that first year. He has 190 shots. 190. Last year he took 227. And I mean, his first few years, it's like goals wise, 23, 17, 25, 22, 22, and then 25 in the COVID shortened season, which that was when he really took off. Yeah, and even the last 2 years in Florida, 33 and 31. So this is kind of an anomaly to do this at age 28 after basically playing for almost a decade now.
Yep.
It's a wild season, definitely a career year for him. But I got to say, this is interesting to me. I hadn't really thought about this as a possibility yet. Could he get 1,000 career points? He's at 524 now. He's 28.
I was, Taylor, thinking about that this weekend too. It's so funny that you say that. It is a crazy thought, but I think that the odds of that are not bad if he decides to stay in Florida and continues to play on that power play with Barkov and Tkachuk. And yeah. But that is what's so crazy to me. I want to look to double check and be sure, but I would bet that his most common line mate at 5-on-5 over the past 2 years has been Anton Lindell.
Oh, really? So Reinhart is a, it's an interesting case because I still really don't feel bad. I feel a little bad the Sabres traded him, but really it's more like, it's not the normal, like, wow, you traded a guy in his prime and now he might be a 50 goal scorer. That's devastating. It's not even really so much like that because that era was going so poorly. It felt like important to move on from everyone, not everyone, but most guys. And he clearly wanted to move on as well. And they made a big mistake signing him to a bridge contract rather than trying to extend him before he got, you know, his value got too high. But I kind of just, it's a nice situation to be in from my perspective, because they did get two guys for him that I have high hopes for, and Levi and Kulik. And, you know, I wish him well. I don't mind the Panthers as an organization. They've been pretty inoffensive my whole life because they were, you know, they were bad basically from the time I was 7 until, I don't know, 5 years ago or less. So I don't mind him at all. Or I don't mind them at all. And obviously, I like him as a player, but I don't really have that many regrets with the trade. I'm glad to see him doing well on the other side, more so than other Sabres. And despite the fact that the season hasn't gone all that great.
Yeah, I totally get that. I think I just feel very conflicted when it comes to assessing the trade because of the fact that on the one hand, it was inevitable that his time here was done. It just felt like from everything that we had learned at the time that there really wasn't any kind of a scenario where he was going to stick around or would feel comfortable in sticking around. And so when it comes down to it, like looking at it from that perspective, you had to make the move and you ended up getting Kulik and Levi out of it. And we feel pretty good about the careers ahead for both of those guys. So, you know, on that side of things, of course, it's great to see that he's doing well. And it feels like we're going to hopefully, you know, get our end of the bargain here, too, if Levi turns into the starter that we all think he's going to be, and Kulik can turn into an every night NHL player, or he just turns into potentially even a major piece of a move to go out and get somebody to add to the roster. So from that perspective, yeah, I don't feel bad about it. But I mean, I'd be lying if I also didn't say that I would definitely like to have this version of Sam Reinhart, even if it is different and he's playing in a better situation. Just seeing the player that he is and the plays that he's been making, it would be pretty special to have that kind of player in this forward group right now with how well UPL is playing and with Yuri Kulik not even being in the NHL right now. Of course, the move was made at a time where it was a win-now move for Florida and was more of course, a futures move for Buffalo. But looking at where this team is now and how close they are, again, it's not like a scenario that ever could have happened, but it would be pretty insane to have Sam Reinhart playing with the Sabres right now at the level that he's playing at. Even if the production isn't necessarily 50 goals, he's still playing that well in that offense and is being a driver, obviously, on the power play, something that the Sabres are really lacking at right now, but also at 5-on-5, not playing all of his minutes with Barkov or Tkachuk. I mean, he's really a special core piece for them, and just to see how his career has blossomed, it's obviously great to see, but there's a part of me that it's hard to not miss that.
Taylor, anything else that we want to get into or talk about before we wrap things up for today?
Ooh, one thing, yeah. Actually, I just remembered. That Zach Hyman 50th goal assisted by McDavid, who now has one of the top 25 single-season assist seasons going on right now. Tied for 25th with Mario Lemieux. About, I think, 11 games left to play.
Wow.
Yeah, it's 92-93 Mario, I think.
91 also, assists. While we're talking about McDavid, Taylor, he only ate back a Kucherov.
Oh, that's over. Come on.
He's ate back. He's ate back with three fewer games played.
Ooh, actually, wait, because he is playing right now. He has two assists, so he might be six back.
Oh, you know what? Wait, yeah.
Yeah, he's six back. But the Lightning play tonight as well. So
they do. Are they playing right now?
They are playing.
They're in Anaheim tonight. Never mind.
Yeah.
I mean, let's see. How many games does Edmonton have to go here? They're going to be at 69 games played after today. So 13.
Yeah.
13 to go. And if he's only six back, if Kucherov doesn't get a point tonight, no Braden Point plan for Tampa.
Well, yeah, there's also McKinnon here, though.
McKinnon, that is true. McKinnon is only one back of Kucherov. This, of course, stems from anybody who's started recently listening to the pod or maybe missed the episode. We had talked, it might have been around our like mid-season kind of break that we're doing our predictions for the second half or something like that. And I think my bold prediction was that McDavid, right? Wasn't it how did it come up that there's a chance that McDavid would be able to catch Kucherov?
Yeah, which is things we were keeping an eye on across the league.
Right, Yeah,
that's one of them. I mean, it would be pretty crazy because he was pretty far back. I think at this point, though, Kucherov, you know, he's been scoring too consistently. I mean, as of right now, because that Oilers game isn't over yet, but there's 3 minutes left, probably going overtime because they're tied. You know, I guess we'll see. It's still possible, which is crazy, but I think – either Kucherov or McKinnon's got it.
That's definitely the most likely scenario, but it would be ridiculous if he is able to do this. Yeah.
Ooh, one last thing, actually, before we go. Sam Reinhart just got his 50th goal.
So let's go. There we go. It's two for Sam Reinhart tonight. Wow, 50 goals, man. That is just, again, as we said, you really... It's kind of hard to wrap your head around, but very happy for him. That's incredible. Seen any new movies recently that you want to recommend at all, actually?
Actually, yeah. I saw Love Lies Bleeding today.
How was that?
It rocked. I liked it a lot.
What was your out of five? Did I see a 3.5?
Yeah, but it was a great time. 3.5 doesn't really do justice for what a good time the movie is, in my opinion. Kristen Stewart, great job. Ed Harris, very scary fella in this one.
Okay.
He's great. Generally, just really good performances all around, I thought.
Very nice. All right. Good stuff. Appreciate that, Rec. I saw Dune 2 in IMAX, and it kicked ass. So I know we already recommended Dune, but my new recommendation is to see it in IMAX. That being said, everybody, we will be back with a brand new episode on Thursday, like we said. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Straight Up Sabres presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo. Make sure you're checking out both the presenters of this podcast on their respective websites, whatever streaming platform you're currently using to listen to this episode. Make sure you're checking out all of our fellow shows and make sure you're following both the Hockey Podcast Network and the Charging Buffalo on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where you can also find us, Straight Up Sabres. And before you close out of this app, whatever it is you're listening to, to whatever you're using to listen to this episode of Straight Up Sabres, make sure you leave us a nice little rating or review and are following or subscribe to us if you aren't already. Last but not least, we have our wonderful sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. We just love them so dearly, folks, and we hope that you will check out DraftKings and use that promo code THPN at checkout to take advantage of great deals. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Thursday. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Straight Up Sabres. Sitting on the bedroom floor.